It's Monday, the 1st of April. I'm Miranda Sawyer. Welcome back to Paper Cuts, the modern newspaper review, where every day we club together to buy the entire spread of the UK national press and then get our money's worth by working our way through every single item in them, from front page to football, and we do all the puzzles too. And we've been delighted that so many of you have joined our Paper Cuts Supporters Club. What with times being hard and the cozy lives being so darn high, we appreciate every quid you can toss us. Don't forget, you can get ad-free episodes and a special extra bit at the end of the show by signing up. Just go to back.papercutshow.co.uk and follow the link in the show notes. It's definitely cheaper than today's guests' bills for fruit and flowers. Welcome to Paper Cuts. We read the papers so you don't have to. Thanks for joining us on Paper Cuts, where I'm sitting in the hot seat between two cool customers. I'm Miranda Sawyer, and joining me on the show today is ex-Prime Minister and big Brexit big boy, it's Boris Johnson. Hi, Boris.
I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
That'll be a change. And also on the show is ex-Prime Minister and monster mortgage missus, it's Liz Truss. Hi, Liz.
Never fear, the Trussmeister's here. It's now over, I don't know how many days since I had the privilege of being your Prime Minister. And since then, I've been on a very steep learning curve. So steep, in fact, that I fell all the way down again and haven't learned anything at all. Joke.
It's lovely to see you. So what have we got on the front pages today? Boris, what do you have?
So I've got the Times and the main headline, Deliveroo, in talks to buy the post office, which I have to say, it's a pretty decent idea. There's a small section of the garden where Carrie doesn't know about it. She thinks it's compost, and I'm able to conceal myself in there, and the Deliveroo chap will just shove various things. And I don't know if you've heard of Nando's, but they do a piri chicken covered, slathered in an extraordinary sauce that is able almost entirely to conceal what it used to be. So I'll often get those delivered. I'm all in favour. Why not?
Okay, Liz, what do you have? You've got the fun papers, right?
Oh, yeah, it's such a laugh. I've got the Mail here, which is fantastic, which is always full of women like me in kind of uber bodycon dresses looking disturbingly sexual with my borderline BDSM necklace. Anyway, Sarah Vine, I love Sarah, she's so grateful, she was Govey's wife. Poor her. Anyway, she's talking about how the BBC's woke agenda is making me sad about my sex life. And of course, I have come up against the woke establishment on many occasions when they just don't seem to get my maverick ahead of its time economic plans.
Now, on the front page of The Telegraph and The Guardian today is a story about a new government education initiative. No five a day without five times table is the headline. Right. Boris, what is this about?
This is an initiative, one that I was very proud to have launched myself. And see, finally, smug boy Sunak is picking it up and trying to the ball has come loose from the scrum and he's trying to run it round the side. But it's perfectly simple. You have to do Sunak wants the children to do maths in order to qualify for food. And my plan was Greek for leeks. If you could speak in ancient Greek for up to 40 minutes, you'd be able to have a little leek tartlet made available to you. So, you know, there's nothing new here, but old smug boy Sunak likes his numbers.
Do you think it'll work? I mean, it's like a kind of primary school version of, you remember the idea that he had, everyone learned maths up to sixth form, and this is like a primary school version of it.
Right, just sorry to clarify, sixth form is because it eaten sort of straight through.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so you arrive at 13 and then I remember leaving Oxford shortly after that.
Okay, so it's a little bit before that. So basically, right. You at the moment, you don't have to learn maths after the age of 16.
Right.
And he's saying learn up to 18. But this is initiative for little tiny kids. It's for primary school kids. And right. I was wondering how it might work.
Well, I'm not sure it will work. And I tell you the reason why this sort of thing is difficult. When you combine, and this is where I think Smug Boy Rishi has got this wrong, actually, he's dropped the ball, is if you combine maths and children, what you find, in my experience, is you lose count.
You can.
Can I just say that I have always put mathematics at the top of the agenda and have previously written papers on the rigorous teaching of mathematics to such an extent that I would fire times table questions at my civil servants. 9 sevens!
Right.
8 sixes. I mean, there was no stopping me. And I think this policy is actually a win-win situation because children do the maths tests in order to get their school lunch. If they fail, they starve. So by a process of natural selection, we get a nation of mathematicians.
Who are slim and keen.
Well, yes, although they might not be slim if they've been eating their pizza and chips, which seems to be the content of most school dinners these days.
There's a pleasing sort of balancing out where the brighter children, the swotty boys,
yes,
little swotty boys, little swotty girls, are going to be hopefully quite subdued by the amount of calories available to them that in the afternoon they won't be able to do anything at all. So we'll have a mixture of very thin, thick children and very bright, but sort of sleepy, chunky boys.
Now, there's a story in City AM which actually sounds right up your boulevard, Liz. Banks are proposing a brand new type of mortgage deal. Liz, what are they proposing?
Well, people do often think of me and mortgages in the same breath. You know, bang, and the mortgage is gone. You know, people did think that they could, you know, they did try to warn me off my super rad budget plans, but I knew exactly how to counter their arguments. I just stuck my fingers in my ears and went, la, 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 la. I would like to say, you know, to anybody who is currently suffering from a much higher mortgage than previous to my mini budget, I would like to say sorry. Not sorry, in your face, jokes. Anyway, this is a new idea to help with the difficulties some people are having with paying their mortgages. Oops. Start them earlier and spread them out over a longer period so the monthly payments are lower. So now there's a new product which allows you to start paying off your mortgage before you've even found a flat. Hashtag radical, hashtag jokes, hashtag slay queen, hashtag go get 'em girl.
I've got to say, Liz, I think there's a lot of excitement for young people where this is concerned. You know, constantly hearing the generation, whatever they are now, they can't get on the housing ladder. But this seems to me, it opens the door for people paying a mortgage without actually having to worry about having a house. And there's got to be something in that.
Absolutely. I mean, these days, the only way to get on the property ladder is to get onto an actual ladder and climb into somebody else's house.
Yes.
But yes, I mean, you know, we could start, like, children could, like, be putting their mortgage into their piggy banks, into their young saver at the post office, and it would encourage fiscal responsibility in the infant child.
Well, I'm glad you said this, Liz, because actually, and Miranda, you know, you're from the north.
I am, yeah.
So pay attention, because okay. There's no, because, no, and I mean this actually, there's no reason why people in the North shouldn't be able to live in houses and all this if they chose to. But there are, Liz, there are, Miranda, there are finance packages available for property. If you meet or don't meet with a relative who's not, strictly speaking, a relative, loans can be arranged. That's my point. And you don't, you know, you don't have to meet them or reveal whether you met them. And if you did meet them, you don't have to say when or how or if anything was discussed. And it really is as simple as that. And people do complain about this, but actually, I was able to finance something Carrie chose, but I was able to finance it through that. So you're not always stuck, is my point.
Well, you're not always stuck, Boris, I think is
no.
The point you're making.
No, yeah. I'll be honest with you, rather like my column in the Mail, I'm very unclear what point I was making. Very unclear.
Hello, I'm Ros Taylor with news of Oh God, What Now?, the politics podcast that's never going to leave its voter ID at home. On Friday's show, it's 6 months until the US election and Donald Trump is stuck sitting on trial in a New York courthouse. Is he bulletproof or can Joe Biden turn around the polls? In the second half, it's local elections week, but we've steadily taken power away from local authorities. What if we gave it back? And in the extra bit for supporters, is there a right level of ruthlessness in politics? That's Oh God, What Now? With me, Ros Taylor, Raphael Baer, Hannah Fern, guest Nikki McCann Ramirez, out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, in T2, there's yet another piece about sex parties. They do love them at the Times. They love them as much as The Guardian loves cold water swimming. Anyway, this time around, they've sent three different writers to three different types of sex parties. One went to a boomers party, sex party, one to a millennials one, and one to a highly exclusive, posher than posh one. So, Boris, I know that you've read this piece. Which one sounds the best to you?
So when it comes to these sorts of liaison sex parties and the like, I do just want to say before, but by word of warning, and I do think this is important, that people must know if you're going to go to this sort of thing, that the with the whole and this one Scotch egg means six people can gather on one park bench. And remember the crucial R rate. So I hope that that's helped to clarify some of the rules.
But Boris, we were talking about sex parties.
Yes. Right.
Have you ever been to a sex party?
Look, I'm here for transparency. Right, I'm more than happy to answer any of these questions. Just one, I have a question for you, actually, okay. Which is, do you think Carrie will listen to this?
I would say not. I think she's too
then
busy.
Then yes, I have. Yes, I have. This morning, and I have one booked in later on.
Oh, great. Okay, yes. So you're an expert. This is brilliant. You
well,
could write a column on
to
it.
Be fair, the one later on, only I know that is a sex party. The other people attending don't yet know that, but they will. They will.
Okay.
Right, so with all of these things, it's a question of time. You know, it was a great presidential figure. Bill Clinton used to manage to make anyone he engaged with feel like they were the only person in the room. And I've often made people feel like I'm the only person in their room. Which I think is similar.
Kind of similar, yeah. I mean, the parties sound quite fun. There's a boomers party, a millennials one, and a posh one. And with the boomers party, the reporter basically says, look, there's bowls of Viagra available. There's a chairlift to help you get up the stairs. Everybody's really nice. You could stop for a nice cup of tea. It sounds quite good, I thought.
Well, I am Generation X. so I am neither a boomer or a millennial, and I might be Generation X, but I'm not necessarily X rated. But when it comes to which group are best at parties, I always go for posh boys, because posh boys have spent so long cooped up in boarding school that they're just kind of, you know, they get to sex and they're just so grateful to be there that, you know, they're right on it like a car bonnet, which I wholeheartedly approve of.
Yeah, it's true, actually. The posh one, if you read the person that went to a posh party, they, it was like, it's straight in, no messing. They bang away for hours. And then once they're done, they have a fag and talk about who's going to win the 440 at Cheltenham. It sounds quite fun. What would you say, Boris? Those your type?
Yes, I do think it's fun, actually. I will say that. I do think it's fun. But I also say, you know, it can become mundane. If you do it too often, and that is why I, as often as not, will simply invite a partner of mine to dress up as a biscuit, and that is a wonderful, wonderful flashback to today, to happier times.
Custard cream or jammy dodger?
Well, both nicknames that I've had referred to me, Liz. Yes.
Now, the Royals, as ever, are dominating the headlines, and there is an interesting piece in the Mail. This is about the royal succession. So essentially what the piece is saying is Andrew, Harry and Meghan have been demoted. Kate and Charles are ill. And William, this is an actual quote from William, really fucking busy with the kids, actually. So what they're asking
is... He's only got three.
What they're asking is who can step into the shoes when needed to represent our country at a state dinner or whatever. I mean, Boris, who are you thinking?
Well, you're very kind. You are very kind to ask.
I wasn't.
Oh, right. No, obviously. I was sitting, Liz, when you did the wonderful reading at Her Majesty the Queen's funeral.
Yes.
I was just a few yards away from you.
Yes.
Staring intently as you read something that I had rehearsed.
From the Gospel according to St. John.
I'd rehearsed it for months, and I must say, it was a real pleasure for me to sit that close to you as
Thank you
did that. But I think, look, if you're looking for someone who has the grace and the tact and the visibility of the royals, I think there is a candidate who presents herself extremely well. And I must say, I think if nothing else, her loyalty should be rewarded. And that is Nadine Dorries. I don't see any reason at all why Nadine Dorries couldn't open a train.
Liz, would you like Nadine to do that? I mean... What are you thinking?
I'm thinking that, you know, it maybe doesn't necessarily have to be a royal personage. Although if it were to be a royal personage, I'm all for Andy. I mean, you know, he loves a helicopter. He loves a PJ. I mean, I recently went to Australia on a PJ, spent $4,000 just on booze. I'm living my best life. I was so I'm kind of like, you know, swaying towards him. However, I don't think, I mean, I am actually surprisingly Republican in this regard, because I sort of, you know, when I was Foreign Secretary, I would go round the world representing our country to all these other kingdoms. And I really think everybody slept better in their beds at night knowing that I was the face of the UK around the world. I mean, when I was younger, I was actually a Lib Dem. Jokes. And I made a speech about abolishing the monarchy. But straight after I'd made it, I made another speech saying I wish I hadn't said that. And my career has kind of gone along in that kind of flip-flop way ever since. If there were no royals, as I suggest, at least I wouldn't have to perfect my curtsy, which I don't know if you saw my curtsy to King Charles, but it was rather more Mrs. Overall than anything else.
I knew that the Secret Security Service were, as we all were as we watched it, Liz, worried that you might have been shot in the hip. It did, you know. But I just to pick up on one of your suggestions, and I actually think, and I support this, that your the notion of Prince Andrew being able to return to public life is one that should be considered, because I have to say, and I'd like to suggest that Liz be on the same page as this. If he can find a way back, bugger me, there's hope for both of us.
Well, exactly. And, you know, it's like that, you know, the Tory party donor who made the racist and sexist comments.
He's a great philanthropist.
He said sorry.
Yeah.
Andy said sorry. These welcome them back. If we say sorry, we can come back.
Yeah. What's the word you keep saying? Say what?
Sorry. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so we'll have it. I'll have a look at it after we finish recording and see. It's not that's not from the Greek, is it?
Not as far as I know. Although apologize might well be Greek.
Yeah. So I don't know. Don't know. Not words that have come across my desk, and a great many things, and indeed people have.
That's the end of today's paper cut. Thanks to Boris. And thanks to Liz.
Cool, thanks. I'm off on my holly bobs now, so me and the fam lamb are all off on the PJ at somebody else's expense. Woohoo!
We certainly hope that Marcus Brigstock and Jan Ravens have enjoyed this episode. Do you like them?
He's that awful, looks like a T-fowl man, doesn't he? Enormous head. Sort of Richard Osmond style bonce on him. Radio 4 sort of wokerati. So I obviously wish him well because he went to boarding school. But apart from that, no. I'm afraid he's a bit of a wet.
And Liz, what do you think of Jan Ravens?
Well, I haven't actually heard. I think she's on a show called Dead Ringers on Radio 4, which is just the woke BBC spouting out propaganda. So I don't listen. She's unknown to me, I'm afraid.
I've been Miranda Sawyer, and you've been listening to Paper Cuts on a day when the Star reveals that a man in a dress, who everyone presumed was dead, has apparently broken out of his grave and is busy scaring his old mates by turning up at their Boise dinner parties. Christ alive. See you tomorrow.
Okay, so this was written and presented by Miranda Sawyer, who's from the North, so well done her, Red Wall, with Jan Ravens and Marcus Brigstock, with, of course, special thanks to Jason Hazley. Production was by Liam Tate. Audio production, Jade Bailey. Design, James Parrott. Music, Simon Williams. The managing editor was Jacob Jarvis. Executive, which is a lot of people worked on this. Too many in my view. But anyway, executive producer Martin Boitosh, group editor was Andrew Harrison, and with regret, Paper Cuts is a Podmasters production. Bah.